Hi, I'm Marty.
I'm Dave.
I'm John.
I'm Aaron.
And this is Door 14 Hockey. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Door 14 Hockey Podcast. I'm your host Marty, alongside John.
Hello.
You return after absence last week, or the last podcast 2 weeks ago. How are you doing?
I've returned from the injured reserve list. A couple of weeks ago, bad sick bug through the house. The joy of having a small tiny human who goes and spends a lot of time with lots of other small tiny humans. They bring back a lot of wonderful germs and bugs for the sole purpose, it seems, of debilitating the two adults at home that look after them.
Nice. Okay, great. Yeah. So you've come off the injury reserve list and Dave has moved on to the injury reserve list today. He's off this week because he's not well.
Whilst I obviously hate to see anyone on the IR, I have to say it did work in my favour. As you can tell, I'm not in my usual surrounds. I'm back in my father-in-law's little snug at the back of the house. I think this is the second time I've done the podcast from here. Dave being on the injured reserve sadly gave me the opportunity to keep his season ticket seat warm for him during the second of the Coventry doubleheader games this weekend past, so it was nice to get back to the SSE again.
Yeah, should we mention the fact that I almost made you miss a game on this adventure to Belfast this time around?
Let's talk about it now. The fact that you have, amongst several other podcast duties, you have one administrative task which you take care of at the very start of the season, and admittedly this year you've been keeping on top of changes, but you take the giant schedule and you put it onto our shared calendar.
Yeah.
And unfortunately I've spent the last month or so looking at this trip over to Belfast and going, do I want to go to the Coventry game, or will I have a look at this wonderful looking split weekend home away series with Sheffield? And I was like, do you know what, I think I'll go to the Sheffield game. Yeah, it's not a split weekend. That's a doubleheader away.
No. Yeah, no. Totally my fault.
I initially had not planned on going to the Coventry games at all. So I've got to say, like, Dave, I hate saying it, I'm glad you weren't well, because if you hadn't, I'd have brought a Giants jersey for absolutely no reason.
Yeah, I apologise. But at least, you know, it worked out in the end. So, you know, for that we can't be bad. Aaron also can't join us this week. He is got work duties. He's on an international call, I think he said last night, until about 8:30 or so. So he won't be joining us, unfortunately, this week.
That's what he told us anyway.
So just you and me, John, just us two. We have a good lot to catch up on. We have a rundown of the fixtures as they currently stand at the start of March, March 7th to be exact. So we'll take a quick look at those first, and then we'll switch our attention to the NHL and the Stanley Cup standings as they currently are, or the run into the Stanley Cup, shall we say, towards the end, towards the middle of April, start of May. And then we will go into our usual hockey, our usual podcast, period 1, 2, and 3 of hockey. So John, if it's okay with you, let's get started. Looking at the standings, we'll start with the Elite Ice Hockey League here in the UK. The Sheffield Steelers still sit top with 42 games played and 73 points. The Cardiff Devils sit in second with 43 games played, 62 points. The Belfast Giants are in third with 43 games played, 54 points. Guildford Flames are in fourth with 44 games played, 49 points. Manchester are currently in fifth with 43 games played, 46 points. Coventry are in sixth with 43 games played, 44 points. Glasgow sit in seventh with 43 games played, 42 points. And Dundee currently hold eighth spot with 44 games played and 42. Ninth place is the Fife Flyers with 45 games played, 39 points. And the Nottingham Panthers sit in 10th with 42 games played, 37 points. John, not much has changed at the top of the league since our last podcast. The Sheffield Steelers are still sitting there holding the top spot, first place, 73 points. That's 11 points clear of their nearest, I suppose, rivals, shall we say, at this point, the Cardiff Devils. So it's, I don't even feel like we can say it's a two-team race at this point. But obviously the Belfast Giants go up against the Sheffield Steelers this coming weekend in Sheffield. What's your gut instinct around the Belfast being able to scalp the Steelers and take away 4 points from this weekend? Any possibility of that in order to slow down the rampaging Steelers and give the Cardiff a bit of a boost towards that top spot? What do you think?
Is that a serious question, or is it the start of your new stand-up routine?
Yeah, no, generally serious question. What do you think?
No, it's not going to happen, mate. Like, you just have to look at the last few weeks on the magnificent location that is the Giants Facebook forum, the fan forum, I should say. The number of people over the last, I want to say, month, probably more actually, who have been trying their damnedest to get rid of game tickets in Sheffield, to get rid of hotels, to pass flights on to other people. It's brutal. Like the Belfast fans, they're not daft. We know fine rightly that the Steelers are an absolute force this season. Like, there is, up until Christmas, you could have said they've just had a run, they haven't had the injury problems of other teams. Whatever's happening in Sheffield or has happened in Sheffield this season, they need to bottle it. Because other teams will be looking at what they're doing and how they're doing it. They're managing to string together an incredible amount of wins. I mean, what are they on now? 5 regulation losses and 1 overtime loss. They are a winning team. I think, having looked through social media, I haven't done the maths myself because it's not my team. I don't really care. I think they're about 5 games away from clinching. Which is great for them, especially when they might be able to do it in the next couple of weeks or so. Fingers crossed they don't do it in Belfast. That's the one thing I really don't want. I'd much prefer them to do it either on their home ice or at one of any other 8 rinks around the league. The likelihood is at this point that they are going to clinch it. Cardiff's result last night against Coventry more or less it doesn't mathematically, but it kind of puts tell to any idea that Cardiff are going to be Giant killers, Steeler killers, whatever. It's Sheffield's. They are your champions elect at this point. Yeah. The math just says that someone else can win it. No one else will win it. No. Now, you asked me about this weekend. Sadly, I just don't see it. I don't see an upset coming here. I don't see results coming Belfast way. And that is not me being a doomsayer or being a poor Belfast Giants fan. That's me being realistic in the face of an incredible Sheffield team this year.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, if you look at the run-in for the Sheffield Steelers, coming between now and the end of the season, I mean, they've got the Belfast Giants 4 times, so 2 doubleheaders, 1 home and 1 away. There's a away doubleheader, there's a home doubleheader, by the way, John, and that is actually happening at the end of the month. The dates are in the calendar correctly there. They also have Cardiff twice, they have the Panthers twice, they have Coventry, they have Guildford. It'd be hard to see in any way an implosion of any kind at this stage. And I think you're right. I think it's champions elect, shall we say.
Short of the Steelers organization folding for some unknown reason, they are winning the Elite League.
Yeah. I can't see them not.
What's more interesting, sorry, you're going to come to it, is the bottom of the table.
Yes, I was going to say that. I mean, I think we can clearly see that, obviously Cardiff obviously have solidified their place in the playoffs already. We've got the nice little X beside their name on the Elite League website, as well as obviously Sheffield. Belfast will probably get that in the next probably 2-3 weeks, hopefully. Guildford and Manchester probably, I would say, are shoo-in for their playoff spots as well. For the playoff finals weekend, but the semifinals. I suppose the main question comes in if we look at the bottom end of the table. So we look at the Glasgow, Dundee, Fife, and Nottingham. 42 points, 39 and 37. Do we see Dundee, Glasgow and Fife switching round places? Do we see a Nottingham Panthers swing in the last run-in that'll maybe put them into that final 8? What do you think?
I think Panthers take at least 8. They have games in hand and they are starting to get results now. A couple of signings that they've made over the last couple of weeks leading up to the deadline are making the difference, and I think that team is now at a place where they can mentally start thinking about winning games again, not just playing hockey. They seem to have that mentality back within that squad. They've obviously had an incredibly tough season, but you're starting to see now that they believe that they can get out of 10th place, they can get themselves into playoff contention. And you know what? Like, a team like that, a team that have been through what they've been through, if they can get into playoffs, if they can get into that contention, I wouldn't rule them out of silverware. Like, that is a team who will, if they make playoffs, will have four games in front of them for silverware. That would be a massive impetus for that team to go out and win a trophy over four games. To be honest, out of all the teams who I would, if they make playoffs, that I would like to see lift that trophy, I'm certainly not saying hand it to them after the season they've had. I'm saying go out and earn it, and if they earn it, what a story.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, if we look at the Nottingham Panthers running for the final few weekends coming up, I mean, they've got the Cardiff Devils twice, they've got Fife Flyers twice, they've got Glasgow Clan twice, they have Sheffield twice, they have Dundee. I'm not saying that's
the key mixed games there are the Scottish teams.
Yeah.
Yep, the key games there are the Scottish teams, because the three Scottish teams are sitting above them one after the other. Taking points from those teams is enormous, because whilst it's not exactly, it's almost like a regulation win is like a 4-point swing against a team like that, because it's two points that they can win, but it's also 2 points that the opposition, the Scottish teams, can't win. So getting those wins will be massive, and like I say, I think at least 8th, I think they're good for. I wouldn't be surprised to see them probably finish 7th, to be totally honest. And I imagine, sad as it is, I'd love to see this be very, very different. It feels very much like Fife are going to end up rooted to the bottom of the table again after promising so much with bringing in Tom Coolen. That team doesn't feel like a team that deserves to be in 10th, but they're going to end up there again. And it's sad to see, really.
Yeah.
It's also sad to see Dundee, who I think, if everything I've said comes true, I reckon they're the other Scottish team who miss out. The second half of the season has been very different for them from the first half. They were abject failures in the Challenge Cup. I don't think they won a game in the group stage of the Challenge Cup against the other two Scottish teams and against the Belfast Giants. They looked like they were in real, real problems. And Mark Lefebvre has turn things around there enough that if you were to end the league today, 8th place looks like a success for them. Sadly, though, I don't think that's where they're going to end up. I do think they end up missing out because I don't think they... I think out of the other Scottish teams, I feel like Glasgow are the ones who are now on a... They've got a little bit of a roll on, and I feel like they probably will scrape it. And while I say that it's going to be a bit of a sad failure for Fife and Dundee to miss out, it's going to be an abject failure still for Glasgow to potentially scrape 7th or 8th place, because it's not an organisation that should be sitting in 7th and 8th. They should be assured of their place by January, mid-January. They should know that they're going to be in playoffs, but they're currently not.
I think you're... I got to agree. This is officially on the record. I'm agreeing with you on something. But yeah, I would agree. I mean, I do have this feeling that Nottingham in the running will have a bit more success, and I think they could maybe clinch one of the last spots for the playoffs. But yeah, if any teams that I see at the bottom, I would agree. Fife looks to be the team that will be rooted there right at the very, very tail end of the league, followed by Dundee, which is sad, as you say. I mean, at the start of the season, all these good things, all these promises, all these kind of excitement was happening. It was very exciting, especially for Fife with obviously the moves that were being made there. Glasgow, similar. The Glasgow Massive at the start of the season, where it was like, you know, this massive team, they were taking points, they were doing really well. They were even up there in the league. They were kind of performing quite well, especially around up until about November time. And then just downward spiral. It was just kind of a downward trend for them from that point forward. So it will be interesting to see. It is more strange to think that this year we are kind of more intrigued by the battle that is going on at the bottom, and those last four, that last space in eighth and whatever. So it will be interesting to see that last running on the way in towards the end of the season, which isn't that long away. It is only about 6 weeks, I would say now. So it is coming up on us fast.
Something like that.
It's not even. I think it's possibly 5 weeks because we're now in the second week of. Yeah, it could be 5 weeks. Yeah, it's
what month is it?
Quick. March. Let's switch our attention and go across the water to the NHL and take a quick look there at the standings as they currently are as of, again, this date, which is the 7th of March. I've got the date right again today. Starting off in the eastern side of things in the Atlantic Division, for the first time this season, I'm actually saying there's a change, there's a difference in the ranking in the Atlantic Division, and that is the Florida Panthers are currently sitting first ranked with 63 games played and 90 points. Knocking Boston off that top spot for the first time, I'd say in about 2 years. I haven't seen Boston off that top spot in that division in forever. Boston are currently sitting in second with 64 games played and 87 points. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are sitting in third with 62 games played and 80 points. The Metropolitan then, New York Rangers are currently sitting top with 62 games played, 84 points. The Carolina Hurricanes are sitting in second with 61 games played and 78 points. And the Philadelphia Flyers are holding that third spot with 63 games played and 72 points. The two wildcard spots are currently held by Detroit Red Wings and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Switching over to the western side of the country and the Central Division, Dallas Stars are currently sitting top with 64 games played, 85 points. The Winnipeg Jets are in second with 61 games played, 83 points. And the Colorado Avalanche are in third with 64 games played, 83 points. Pacific Division then, Vancouver Canucks sit top with 64 games played, 87 points. Edmonton Oilers are in second with 60 games played, 78 points. And third place is held by the Los Angeles Kings, 61 games played, 73 points. The two wildcard spots currently held by Vegas Golden Knights, knocked out of the top three for the first time, I think, this season. 62 games played at 73 points. And the Nashville Predators are sitting in the second wildcard spot, 63 games played, 73 points as well. John, I think this is properly the first time, I think, this season, especially in the last few podcasts that we've been doing together, that there's change, like wholesale change in relation to positions. Okay, maybe not certain teams being knocked out of the top three, but I mean, in terms of, you know, if people had been saying, were, you know, if you're looking at the start of the season, even mid-season around December time, and you looked at, you know, at that point, who looks to be teams that are on form and heading towards the Stanley Cup playoffs and who has a good run and potential for the Stanley Cup this year. Now, we know when it comes to Stanley Cup playoffs, as soon as the main season ends and we get into the playoff season and playoff games, things do change and things tend to be knocked on their, like switched around and flipped in their head. But I mean, we talked at the start of the season about the likes of the Edmonton Oilers struggling, really having difficulties with their place and trying to put together wins and really struggling. They're currently sitting second now in the Central Division. And Boston Bruins, who have looked so, so strong, being switched around with the Florida Panthers and the Florida Panthers sitting on the top of the Atlantic Division. I mean, surprise?
I mean, massive surprise. The biggest one that you're, or the biggest thing that you're looking at is the teams that aren't currently in contention. And like you said, we've still got a good few weeks for positions to be sorted out. We've got trade deadline coming up as well. So teams are starting to look at making big moves. We're starting to see big trades being made. Admittedly, some of the early ones are, you know, fifth round picks for 2097 or something are being bandied about just now for a fourth line defenseman. But at the minute, the big sort of question marks on teams for me is the likes of Washington and especially Pittsburgh, because I think I am right, and I don't know if Mark is currently watching us live. I know he doesn't intend to. Guaranteed I'll get a message as soon as he listens to this, but I think this is potentially Sid's first year where he might miss postseason. So that
we definitely messaged you about that.
that's got the potential to be brutal, and it's, to be honest, like I believe that's the case, because I think that is where rumors of Sid trading and moving from Pittsburgh are starting to come. Now, admittedly, my source on that is Paul Bissonnette on X. I saw that he, now sometimes what he says you take with a pinch of salt, sometimes he's actually right on the money. I mean, that's, what else would you expect from an ex-Nottingham Panther? But I really hope that doesn't start beef between us and Chicklets. I couldn't handle that. So there was talk of teams clearing cap space and making way and going to really make a go for the likes of Sid. Like, he's got a couple of seasons left. Can he be the veteran to pull a mid-table team towards the Stanley Cup? Potentially, yeah. The other ones, like the Lightning. Lightning have been a force for the last few seasons, and currently, now admittedly, they are sitting in a wild card spot, but they don't look comfortable in that wild card spot. So it'll be interesting to see what they do over the next few weeks. And then the other interesting one is the Blues being currently behind the Preds in wild card contention again. They're not completely out of it, but there is a substantial gap in Central. In the West for the wild cards. There's about a 9-point swing, I think, between the Preds and the Blues. So there's a substantial gap there, and like, things will still change. It's just interesting, the conversations, because these positions now are what forces teams and forces GMs to make moves, make trades, start looking at what next year's development camp's going to be with the Wild. I mean, to be honest, I think they just start throwing games and look for the number one slot, the number one pick for the draft this season. And look, Dave called it at the start of the year and said, look, the Wild are just going to go for the number one draft pick. He mightn't be far wrong, because they just seem to be sinking like their pockets are full of lead.
Just coming back to your comment just about, Sid, the not-so-kid anymore, Crosby. I mean, again, Mark will be crying at this point whenever he's listening to the podcast. But I'd had seen those rumors whenever you had mentioned about, obviously, the trade rumors. And I'd seen the two teams that they were most likely linked to. One was obviously the Colorado Avalanche. You're currently sitting in the Central Division. So potentially, as you were saying, he could maybe make it to playoff hockey if he moves to that.
Imagine Sid and McKinnon. Imagine Sid and McKinnon on a top line together. That's insane hockey.
Now, the other team that I heard that he was linked with, I kind of thought to myself, why? No, I don't know if there's... The Montreal Canadiens was the other team that was doing the rounds.
That's the one I'd heard.
That I had seen.
That's the one I'd heard.
And I thought, when I seen both rumours, I kind of thought... Initially, I kind of thought to myself, nah, no chance. Especially not the Montreal one. I kind of thought to myself, it'd be a massive coup for the Canadiens to get him.
No, it's a bigger potential than what you think, because we've got ownership change. There's a lot of things happening in Montreal. That's true. A signing like that for new owners, a new backroom staff, a new ethos for a Canadian team that should be playing hockey at the level of at least a Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, unlike the Toronto Maple Leafs and other Canadian teams, they shouldn't be choking in the first round. Sorry, but it's true. A strong NHL needs at least one very strong Canadian franchise, and I would love it to be the Habs. One of the oldest franchises, one of the original six. It would be fantastic to see that jersey being successful again.
We don't have long to wait. Obviously, trade deadline is, well, if you're listening to this podcast, it's later. It's today, Friday the 8th, at 3 p.m. Eastern in the US. So don't ask me to convert that to GMT. Don't ask me to convert that to British Standard Time. I think that's something like 7 or 8 p.m. Yeah. So by tomorrow evening, yes, we'll know by tomorrow evening.
By this time tomorrow, Sid is in a Habs jersey. I'm calling it now. Do you know what? I would open Paddy Power and do it now, but my phone's actually what I'm recording on right now.
I was just thinking, I lifted my phone and was like, maybe I should put a bet on that. I don't know. We'll see. I don't think there's anything else. I don't have any other questions on the standings from the NHL. I think if we're happy enough, I think we could get stuck into our period one of hockey, if that's okay with you.
Let's go.
Okay, period one is a roundup of news stories from here in the UK. For the first time, I'm not going to say ever, but I think for the first time in a very, very, very long time, I think, John, you've done pretty much all of the work for this episode. I think I've put in one link, one story to put in period three, and that's all I've done. So I'm going to hand over to you, and you can take the lead on these stories for period one.
Yeah, so let's start with the news which has dominated the Elite League in particular over the last couple of weeks. And this is the news of the sad passing of Dale Keane, otherwise known across the Elite League and many other leagues in the UK as Keno, who sadly passed away unexpectedly in Scotland. Dale was the assistant coach of the Coventry Blaze. News broke last week, just before Coventry were due to travel to Belfast for the doubleheader weekend. An incredibly well-respected guy across the British game, across the youth development side of things, especially both in the boys and the girls side of the game. Obviously an incredibly well-respected guy in Coventry in particular, which is incredible when you look at how young he was for being like in the game. Like we talk about the Elite League being the old boys club. Well, Keno was the very clear exception to that. Former players from not just Coventry, but across the Elite League and across GB, the Team GB set up, were very vocal in their sadness at Dale's passing. Now, I want to mention as well that the Coventry Blaze have set up a GoFundMe, which we will throw the link up on our socials after we've recorded and when we release the audio version of the podcast as well tomorrow, to help Dale's family with funeral and other costs associated with his passing. The Belfast Giants did hold, Marty, you were there, held a minute's silence and a minute's applause before the Friday game in Belfast. I can only assume I was traveling over on the Friday night, but I can only assume impeccably well respected in Belfast.
As always, the crowd were obviously up and standing and giving their applause for that minute. And yeah, it's definitely a sad situation. It was sad to see someone so young, so still, you know, so young in the career as well, getting to the point where they've got to. You know, it'd be a massive miss for the Coventry team. And I definitely know that emotions were definitely flying. And it probably was on show during that game, how emotions were kind of, you know, up and high. Yeah, no, it was well respected, well followed. Yeah, definitely.
I want to pay a bit of respect as well to a view from the bridge this last week as well. They had Scott from 3-on-3 on with their last podcast, and everyone spoke very, very well. I've listened across both now, and an obvious depth of feeling across the league, and here on podcasts we don't get to know everyone from across the league, but a lot of people who have been involved with teams in one way or another do get to know these personalities. And I think the thing that's got me is that I think actually the key thing for me is I'm sad I'm not going to get to know or get to chat to Dale at any point. He sounds like he was a top guy. Marty, we're not going to dwell on what happened on Friday evening between, I'm not going to use the word Belfast fan because that would be completely incorrect, because clearly the person or persons involved were not representative of the Belfast Giants or what we associate the Belfast Giants with. But there was obviously an interaction between someone in the stands and Danny Stewart. Very clearly not the night for it. In fact, to be honest, there's no correct night for anything like that. Obviously, the Coventry bench, they're playing with their hearts in their sleeve that night in particular. That's just not something that we want to see at all.
No, and as you say, let's not go into too much, but what I will say is the other thing to kind of make sure we highlight here is that we don't sit anywhere near that section where it all took place and what all happened. I can't obviously comment on anything in relation to facts, in relation to what happened in and around there. The only people who know factually what happened was the fan, in inverted commas, himself, and maybe just the people who sat directly around him and know exactly what happened and what was going on. What should be dispelled, though, from what I have heard, is there was comments made that the fan had made some inappropriate comments about the death of Keno. And I believe, like someone, that there was fully defended the fact that there was no sinister. It didn't get as dark or sinister as what people had made out on social media. So I think we should just mention that, because there was a lot of hearsay of people making comments and making speculation about what was being done and why it all kicked off. But again, that's all down to who was there, and they'll know exactly what the factual part is. But we should just kind of quickly highlight just the fact that just be careful about what you read on social media at all times anyway, because it's not always going to be the true story of exactly what took place. And that's all I'll comment on that story.
And I think with that, other than to, as we always do, when something like this happens, just to send our thoughts and well wishes to Keno's friends, family, teammates, as they deal with what is, I'm sure, an incredibly tough time. Here at Door 14, we send our well wishes. Marty, I'm going to move on, if that's okay. I'm going to stick with the Elite League, if you don't mind. I'm going to stick with something that, if anyone follows me on X, you'll have noticed that I have already had my tuppence worth on this one. Challenge Cup final, apparently, is still happening, even if the Belfast Giants aren't playing in it. I mean, it seems daft to continue to play it without the Giants, if you ask me. But anyway, a small team from Yorkshire are going to play an even smaller team from just outside London, apparently, for the Challenge Cup. The Sheffield, the Steelers, apparently, are going to play the Guildford Flames, on the 13th of March, so this coming week. At 7:15, and it's going to be exclusively live on a channel called Viaplay. I feel like I've heard that before somewhere. Marty, all jokes aside, the Challenge Cup is going to be on TV. It's going to be behind a paywall. Now you can get a very, very special offer from Viaplay, where you can use the promo code EIHL to get your first month for just £9.99. I'll be totally honest, I'm not spending £9.99 for a one-off final in a competition between two teams that I really don't care about. Really, this only applies and is of relevance to two fan bases, surely. And one of those fan bases, the biggest fan base, are hosting the final. What is the thinking behind putting this behind a paywall?
I'm going to be honest. I kind of didn't... Did I expect there to be coverage of this? Because obviously we haven't had any Elite League coverage on TV this season. I genuinely didn't think we were going to get TV coverage for the Challenge Cup this year. I didn't know. I honestly thought myself, when it comes to the playoff final weekend, would there be a TV coverage of the playoff final weekend? My guess now is, yes, we're going to get something for playoff final weekend, because obviously they're going to show the Elite Challenge Cup final. So therefore the playoff finals will also probably be on Viaplay. I thought Viaplay was dead and gone, and there's going to be no television coverage.
We knew that Viaplay wasn't dead and gone. What we were told at the time was that they were moving out of the market. They were moving out of the ice hockey market. Specifically, they were moving out of the British ice hockey market, because it wasn't making anything for them, and they were concentrating on their European sporting offer is what they were supposed to be doing. Suddenly, we've got Viaplay back. One can only assume that this is down to some... now, admittedly, it's great that it's on TV, so this will be some good work being done by EIHL Media, probably by Luke in the media side, probably by Brooksy on the partnership side of things. This is exactly what Brooksy was brought on to do, was to raise the profile of the Elite League. To me, this isn't raising the profile, unfortunately. This is doing what has been done before. To me, why isn't this on BBC Red Button?
Or alternatively, why isn't it, if Viaplay have the contract to do it, or Viaplay are the ones who wanted to show it, why haven't they just put it on their... Free Sport still exists. Why don't they put it on their Free Sport channel? Like, why don't they put it on their... who knows? Yeah, and the bad thing about this is, and I was kind of looking at this, and I was saying $9.99 for your first month. Great, okay. They've given you an offer code, Elite, EIHL is your offer, is your promo code. Use it to get your $9.99 or whatever it is for your first month. That first month will finish just before the playoff final weekend. So if you want to watch the playoff final weekend with Viaplay, you're either going to have to pay the full rate to, or create a new account. So pay your $14.99 for another additional month so you can get the playoff final weekend, or alternatively, create another account, wait for the promo code, which will probably be exactly the same for the playoff final weekend, and it'll be costing the same amount for the full final playoff final weekend.
Can I propose something to you then? Why have they not done this one as the look at what we can do? Now, you want to watch the playoff final weekend, you want to watch three highly competitive games of ice hockey where a trophy is on the line. Now, admittedly, they've also got the opportunity then to potentially broadcast at least a couple of the semifinals, the quarterfinals as well, and have people pay for that. Now, you do that, you've got at least eight groups of fans who, you get the right away games, you get the right fan bases or whatever getting through to the final, you've got the opportunity to make a fair bit of money there. Why not take the hit on the Challenge Cup final when you've only got two teams who are involved here, when you've got eight fan bases who really couldn't care less other than to keep an eye on Twitter on the night and see who's going to win that game? It seems like incredibly poor business to do this. And again, and I said in the post that I put out when this got released, it's fantastic once again to see British ice hockey maintain its status as the best kept secret in British sports. It's just nonsense, and we scream about it every single year, and still they manage to surprise us by doing the same thing time and time again.
I mean, we can keep screaming as much as we want, but it's like, let's be honest, nothing's going to change. It's just going to continue being exactly the way that it has been until a better TV deal presents itself in some way and the Elite League move forward with a new TV deal. And when that will that ever come, who knows? Maybe you know what, maybe I'm skeptical. Maybe this year, not being on Free Sport and not being on Viaplay for the full season, maybe it's allowed the Elite League to explore other opportunities for next season. Maybe we don't know. Maybe there's something in the pipeline for next season. I would love to live in hope to think that there is something in the pipeline coming for TV coverage to allow for more television, more coverage of the sport on TV. Who knows?
We've been podcasting for just shy of 8 years now, and I think every single year we've prayed for the same thing, than for the Challenge Cup format to change. And neither of those things ever seems to be high on the Elite League's agenda. So there we go.
Can I just give a shout out, just a little subtle design though on the poster, which caught my attention straight away. It's a EIHL Challenge Cup final. It's an all England, like, British final, if you will. And if you look just behind the Challenge Cup trophy, they have used the lighting as in, like, it looks kind of almost like a spotlighting. It's created a little Union Jack kind of design just behind it, and just like kind of like a faint lighting, like rainbow lighting just behind it. Do you see it at the top?
Yeah, I can see the rainbow jack there.
Yeah, I thought that was it caught my attention straight away. So whoever designed that, it was
to be honest, you call it a rainbow. You call it a rainbow jack, that's going to piss off the right people for me anyway, so that's fine.
We'll check.
Marty, I am going to move on to the final story that we have in period one. I say we, that's the royal we that I threw in there. And this is new appointments to the Ice Hockey UK board. So the week before, actually just after you guys recorded last time, Ice Hockey UK announced the step down of a few of their board members. I'm not going to go into who they were because, to be totally honest, I probably should know who they were, but I really don't. But what piqued my interest was a couple of the names that we had announced this week as joining the Ice Hockey UK board. One person who we're very well used to hearing about on this and any other Elite League podcast or media output is Mr. Todd Kelman of the Cardiff Devils and the Elite League board. He will be the representative from the Elite League to Ice Hockey UK. Duncan Hawke from EIH, England Ice Hockey, will be the representative for them. And Jamie Thompson from Scottish Ice Hockey, who I know is involved with the Solway outfit, will be the SIH representative on the board. The key part of all this for me is such a high-profile EIHL representative on the Ice Hockey UK board. Now, we announced last season the onboarding, if you like, of the new CEO, Henry Stallions, who, whilst it doesn't seem like he's done a lot, there hasn't been a lot of vocal stuff. In fact, I follow him on X, and to be honest, he seems to spend a lot more time at football games than he does anything else, or at least that's what he portrays. I'm sure he's doing a lot of very good work behind the scenes for Ice Hockey UK. But having Todd there, like Todd's statement, I'm just going to read what Todd said in his statement. I'm looking forward to being part of the Ice Hockey UK board, working together with the other organisations to help to continue to push ice hockey forward in the UK. There's a lot of expertise around the table and I'm excited to be part of it as all the major stakeholders in the sport come together to help build a strong future. That's strong wording about everyone in the game, especially where we've seen efforts to put together a single voice for ice hockey, a single governing body, have been defeated time and time again. Am I reading too much into it to suggest that there's potentially a step change happening here? Is Todd being involved and is a very prominent EIH board member being involved with Ice Hockey UK? Is this a sign of things to come?
I personally, Todd, from what I always remembered, even whenever Todd was a general manager here in Belfast, sorry, you just confused me there. What was the comment there?
Anthony's convinced that I'm producing a rap record here. Here, okay, I'm just here to rap on ice hockey, Anthony. That's all I'm here to do.
Cringe. As I was saying, even whenever Todd was here in Belfast as GM, I remember the number of the fan forums that we used to hold here. He was always a big advocate for development of British ice hockey and UK ice hockey and how it should kind of progress forward.
But the Elite League isn't a development league.
Let me get there. given the fact that we have seen Team GB move forward to the next stage for Olympic qualifying, and we discussed this in our previous podcasts, something we talked about, will we see a shift and a change in attitude towards, wow, we have a real opportunity here for the first Team GB since, like, what, like 1930s or something, probably. I think something as far back as that. Someone correct me, Anthony will. But, like, you know, you kind of think to yourself, right, if we're taking this seriously, we have an opportunity to kind of move forward, then we need everyone kind of singing. And so therefore the Elite League are kind of like, well, who's the right person to represent the Elite League and who's going to take back, you know, the feedback from that and who's going to kind of be our spokesperson? And I think maybe in this case, Todd Kelman was the right person to put in that position. And is that why we're seeing it? 1948, there you go. Last Olympic appearance. I think it was 1930s. It was the last win, I think, for Team GB. Was that what I'm thinking in my head? Anyway, that's interesting. That's sorry. Anyway, but yeah, as I was saying, Todd right person? And is this what we're saying? Is we're starting to see that? Are we starting to see a move towards taking it serious? I don't know. Maybe that's what we're looking at.
It's interesting to me that I know they're two very, very different things, but it's interesting that we've got this happening and we've got these individuals coming. Anthony's made a good point. I threw the comment up, but we didn't talk about it when I did, about Jamie Thompson being involved as well from the SIH perspective. And yes, it is fantastic. It's another high profile guy from the Scottish game coming in. So having these big names, big perspectives coming in at a time where we're also like SIH and English ice hockey have kind of dipped their toe and tested the water. We talked about it about two podcasts ago about the Scotland v England, about how fans would react to that, about whether they would attend those games. So are we starting to see finally a change in mentality where they're going, do you know what? We're a small island. Why are we trying to do things in silos? Why not make the game better together? And the big stepping stones of that are clearly the EIH, the SIH, and the Elite League, and getting those three big perspectives in the room with Ice Hockey UK, with someone like Henry, who's clearly wanting to pull this all together, I think is fantastic. And I cannot wait to see how they progress this and what we start to see from it. And before I move on, I just want to put this up from Anthony as well. So he's 100% with you on this one. So just clarifying dates for you.
1936. Yeah, I did read that. John, I think that's it for content for period one. So thank you so much for doing all the hard work this week and getting all those stories put together. So we do have two penalties to talk about, or one penalty to talk about, but it's a penalty that we're going to talk about and liken it to another penalty. So that's why I kind of got confused there. So we're going to talk about that penalty now. So we'll move into our penalty box segment for period one. We had talked in our last episode, I know John you weren't here, we talked about the incident that took place, a bit of frustration, shall we say, took place in the fact that the Devils head coach Pete Russell was gate slamming and completely...
Well, very polite gate slamming. It was some of the softest gate slamming I've ever seen. Like I've seen backup attendees close the door harder than what Pete was doing.
So it was the game between the Devils and the Panthers on the 21st of February. While it seems like it was far off since that incident took place, at the time of our last recording, we hadn't got any kind of indication of any response from the Department of Player Safety in relation to the incident, given the fact that other such incidences were reviewed by the Department of Player Safety. But John, we have had something since our last podcast.
Yeah, so EIHL DOPS had released on, I believe it was something like the 23rd of February, Pete Russell was fined for his actions during the game between the Devils and the Panthers on the 21st of February and warned him about his future conduct. So as we've said before, with the fines, we don't know how much it is. We don't know where it goes. It's a complete and utter joke. Like, he was probably fined 20p and three Freddos for all we know. So the reason that I wanted to discuss this and I put this in since you guys didn't have the opportunity to talk about it on the last podcast because the DOPS ruling wasn't out. And a couple of podcasts have already covered this, but I feel like it's a good conversation piece probably within us. It would be nice if we'd had Dave here, especially because I know that he'd have a fairly strong perspective on this. But a lot of people likened this to the ruling earlier in the season against Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin, famously, earlier in the season, was fined and banned for a single game as a result of an interaction that he had had with the referees, which he had also then thrown an object, which I believe was his game sheet, onto the ice as he left after he was serving a misconduct penalty. So, Tom Coughlin, a man of a certain age, who has a hearing disability, gets banned for asking a referee in no uncertain terms to come over and tell him what his ruling on the play was. And he gets a one-game ban. Pete Russell slams the gates, clearly is being very, very in your face with the referee, and then, hilariously, throws a water bottle onto the ice in the direction of the officials. Now, that throw wouldn't have gone through cellophane. Like, it was horrendous. Like, the biggest part of me is, like, the rest of the embarrassment, he needs to be just embarrassed by that throw. Now, whether the bottle had more water or less water in it than what he expected, or whether he was about to trip or lost his balance, I don't know what it was, but it was horrendous. But anyway, that's not the key point here. He threw an object onto the ice with the intention of putting it in the direction of the officials, yet the Elite League have decided that that is not worthy of a ban, while Tom Cullen, throwing his game sheet in the air, or his little clipboard sheet in the air, and it fluttering down onto the ice in what could be suggested as being in the direction of the officials, but onto the playing surface, was worthy of a one-game ban. There's one word that we continue to use with Dops, or we continue to ask for with Dops, and it's the same word that was bandied about 2 weeks ago on Twitter when this was put out, and it's consistency. And yet again, there is none. Like, I've given my side. What's your side, Murray?
I agree. I mean, consistency is the key of the things that we talk about constantly about Dops. If you are going to have a Dops who are going to be fair, who are going to look at all incidences that happen, I mean, you should think in some cases there should be a like-for-like response. I agree with you. The Pete Russell incident, whenever you watch back, there is just as much, if not more, verbal abuse given by Pete Russell than there was from Tom Cullen. And the fact that there was no repercussion in relation to a ban for even a game or whatever it is, it baffles me. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Let's go into the conspiracy theory side of it then. So the conspiracy theory would be that Pete Russell was not banned because who were the Devils playing in their next game? The Sheffield Steelers. So did the Elite League not want to risk potentially disadvantaging the second place team, or potentially allowing the first place team to have the excuse of saying, oh, we won because they didn't have their head coach, or we got those 2 points on them because their head coach was sitting in the stands, not on the bench? It does smack a little bit of the Elite League protecting its product above being above reproach when it comes to its rules and regulations and being consistent with how it rules against coaches in situations where they've got abusive officials and throwing items onto the playing surface. Now, we've seen it plenty of times before with, I think, Adam Keefe took a one-game ban last season for verbals and slamming the door on his way out after getting a game misconduct. I'm pretty sure he took a one-game ban for that. We've seen it plenty of other times with other coaches taking bans for throwing something onto the ice surface. Now, we've seen some famous examples as well of coaches and players throwing things onto the playing surface and getting a ban. Why is Pete Russell treated any different? It's a complete and utter nonsense. He absolutely should not be treated any different. Any different?
I didn't take you for a conspiracy theorist, John. That's quite surprising tonight. I like to think that there's no thought in that way in terms of like, okay, let's not hamper it, let's not kind of mess around with what's going on and what could be a very tasty game and bring in a big crowd. It's going to bring in a big crowd no matter what anyway. When it came out and I seen it for the first time, I was genuinely baffled by the decision. And as you said, John, there's too many instances where it's happened before, and yeah. Just back to that consistency.
Do you know the only consistency that we get is continually that Dops will shoot themselves in the foot and prove yet again that they are not fit for purpose. Now, I'm gonna mention again. I can't remember if I spoke about this interview just in our chat or if I've been able to chat about it on the podcast yet. But a few weeks ago, 3on3 did a fantastic interview with Tom Darnell, previous EIHL referee, probably one of the best EIHL referees. He talked about DOPS with the guys from 3on3, and he talked about the seeming lack of consistency. Now, he didn't talk about this incident in particular because it was recorded before it, but talked about other ones where tariffs and a seeming inconsistency in the number of games and whatever else. And even he, a referee on the inside, when we've had this modern DOPS system in place for the Elite League, he is baffled. Like, he doesn't know why the panel is kept in secret. He doesn't know why the tariffs for the bans are kept a secret. So why do we even have one of the former senior referees of the league who doesn't understand how that works, when it's the referees who put the reports in, it's the referees who give the penalties, but they'd have no idea what happens with it after it goes to EIHL Towers. The whole system baffles me, completely baffles me about how they do it. For me, I don't feel like the league took enough flack for this one. I think they got a day, they got even half a day of people really going after them for it, and then everyone stopped talking. And 2 weeks down the line, I still feel like this is a huge grievance that I have with the way that DOPS has been run. And it's amazing, actually, because it's the last ruling that we've had from DOPS as well, because there's been nothing else since then, which is why this is the only thing that we have in the penalty box segment for period one.
Yep. That is, which brings us to the end of that penalty box segment. And that takes us, I think, now swiftly into our period two. If we don't have anything else, John?
Nope, let's go for it.
Let's go into period two of hockey. Since Ava's not here, and because John did all the work on this podcast, I'm sure his voice is getting sore, I'll introduce period two as well. Period two is stories from anywhere else around the world. Anything else that takes our attention mostly kind of tends to fall into the realms of NHL or AHL or kind of around North America. And I think we've continued suit. We've only got one real story in this period, don't we, John?
Yes, we do. So... guaranteed, obviously, because draft deadline is tomorrow. It'll go absolutely haywire as soon as we hit tomorrow. So people will be listening going, why aren't they talking about that? It's amazing. But there was only one story, really, when I was looking through things that kind of caught my eye. And it was a funny one because it links back to it was the last podcast where I did my 14-on-14 with Jordan Smotherman. So... if you listen to the interview, you'll know that Jordan was drafted by the Atlanta Thrashers, an NHL team that no longer exists. Now, the Atlanta Gladiators, the AHL team, who can't exactly remember who, they're an affiliate of Preds, actually. They're a Preds affiliate. They did a Thrashers night. Obviously, they're an Atlanta-based AHL team. So fantastic. Absolutely amazing. They got dressed up in some really, really nice Thrashers jerseys, all the rest of it. That's not the most interesting part. What the most interesting part of the whole story is, they changed their Twitter handle and their Twitter bio for the night. Now, lots of people do this and changed it round to the Atlanta Thrashers for the night. But in the run-up to this game, they actually ended up with their X being blocked by X, because someone who owns an Atlanta Thrashers official blue tick or gold tick Thrashers account said, they're claiming to be me. So their account got blocked while they were doing a Thrashers night for the Atlanta Thrashers. Absolutely amazing. So my favorite part is, so they got their account back. They finally got it back, and I believe they got it back just before the game faced off. They had to go back to calling themselves the Atlanta Gladiators. They were able to leave the Thrashers logo up, but they had to change their bio. And their bio read, "We are in no way, shape or form trying to impersonate the Atlanta Thrashers. We are the Gladiators and always will be."
I mean,
imagine not understanding what was going on so bad that you decided to block an entire Twitter account because they were about to show respect and respect the tradition of the Atlanta Thrashers and get them blocked on X before a game.
It's just genuinely, it is. He couldn't write it. Whenever I seen this, and I seen that they were banned for the use of that, and and like pretending to be someone else, I was just thinking to myself, honestly, like of all the things I thought I would see, on social media that day, that definitely wasn't one of the things I would see. But yeah, exactly, you're right. I mean, yeah, try your best to kind of show respect and show your appreciation for something, and then for it to be like, you're copying us. No, it's hilarious. I think it's brilliant. Really, really funny.
Yeah. Genuinely very, very funny. And very weirdly, the only thing that we have to talk about in period two, I think this is potentially the shortest period that we've ever had on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, when we went into this period, it's a quieter this week because we are expecting by the time it comes to our next podcast in 2 weeks' time, we'll have a load of stories to talk about between trade deadlines, switching around. We'll probably have a bit more story. There was the story that we talked about about three podcasts ago in relation to the five players who have been kind of on leave, shall we say, not suspended. They're on leave from their respective teams due to a case currently under investigation in Canada, in London, Canada. That is starting to kind of pick
Ontario.
Up pace. Ontario. It's starting to pick up pace, and I've seen stuff about it this week, but there's nothing of major note to discuss on this podcast of this week. So it'd be worth waiting to see where that kind of goes in the next 2 weeks, because I know there's some more to come out of that, and there's no point talking about it right now when there's only kind of a bits to add to it. So we'll wait and we'll talk about that in more detail when more comes out. So yeah, I think that's it for period two. If we don't have anything else, we can get stuck into
no, there's nothing else. I mean, trades are starting to happen. Like, I am keeping an eye on social media, so there are some trades. The Preds have just done a couple of trades there, so I'm keeping an eye, but if I see a big one live, I'll let you know in a way that you'll be so annoyed that it'll be like a live game is happening. So I'll announce it in that sort of way and try not to wake up my daughter.
The one thing that I did see there was the Calgary Flames. Obviously, we didn't talk about that one. That's the only one I noticed overnight when I woke up this morning. I was reading about was the Calgary Flames had got a 2025 first round pick and a 2025 third round pick, as well as taking Merman off from the Golden Knights, and the Golden Knights got Noah Hanifin. And that was the only one that popped into my head last night. And I kind of just wanted to mention that one because I thought that was an interesting pick, seeing the fact that they're conditional round picks, and that's next season, that's the 2025 draft. I know you're talking about like drafts in the future, but like 2025 is it's only a year away. I've seen ones where it's like we get the 2027 first round pick, and you're like, yeah, okay, that's like 6 years away, that's like 5 years away, you know, that was like 2022, and you kind of think to yourself, why would you go so far forward? But anyway, yeah, we'll keep an eye out, and I'm sure we'll talk about them on our next podcast, or at least you guys will anyway. Let's move on to period three without any further ado.
Period three is general Nocky news. Nocky news is where we talk about anything and everything else in the world of hockey that doesn't fit neatly into period one or period two. And actually, for the first time, we're probably actually filling out period three because we've got stuff that actually fits period three, not just because period two has got too much stuff in it. Marty, I want to come to you first to chat about your single story for this podcast, your one piece of input to the entire process this time around, before we have a look at, as we tend to now in period three, we'll have a look at some jerseys.
What? Look, first off, why did you make it sound like why did you make me feel so bad about the fact that I only put in one? I never, and every other week, whenever I put it into our group WhatsApp, and I always say, okay, lads, the running order's up if you want to add anything to it. And then I come to a Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon, and I look and I'm like, John's added one or two, sometimes nothing, sometimes just me. But yet I do it once. The one podcast where I don't add anything in. And can I also just say, for my defense,
make it a habit.
Wait, I was going to say, even in podcasts that I don't, that I'm not here for, which is very, very rare, it's going to happen in the future. But in the so far to this date, on the podcast that I haven't been on, and even the last one I wasn't on a few weeks back, I still added stuff for you guys to talk about. I'm just going to say, I'm putting it out there, and I still did all that for you. And yet you just made it sound like you know what, it's fine. Anyway, back to my story. This story actually hit BBC News this week, and it caught the attention of a lot of people. A box, mystery ice hockey, a box of ice hockey cards, collector's edition NHL ice hockey cards, was found in a Canadian basement and reached $3.7 million at auction. I believe it was Canadian dollars. Yes, it was Canadian dollars. Or, yeah, Canadian. $3.1 million, $3.1 American dollars, $4.2 Canadian dollars, $2.4 million British pounds. There we go. Sorry. Got it.
That's not the thing to get tripping up on this story.
Now, here's the thing about these cards. The cards themselves, the family discovered the case of these hidden cards in Saskatchewan. And when obviously they went to auction, they were elated by the fact that how much they went for. The cards themselves are pristine 1979 to 1980 cards from a defunct trading company called OPG Candy. And they are an unopened box of cards. Now, here is where it caught my attention, and I kind of thought to myself, okay, so the box went for 2.4 million British pounds. And what was said was there could be a possibility, could be, now that's what we should focus on, could be the possibility of more than 20 rookie cards of Wayne Gretzky in this box, who's the greatest sporting player ever to have played the sport. Now that's what I want to focus on, is the fact that said could be. They don't know if there is or not because they haven't opened the box to see. I mean, the auction said in the description that there is 396 cards in the set. There could be about 27 physical pristine Gretzky rookie cards inside the brown box. There's no guarantees, but it'd be a very big statistically anomaly if there wasn't any Gretzky cards in that box. John, for, you know, obviously these are a piece of history, you know, these are a piece of hockey history. The fact that these cards were there, found pristine, unopened, 16 boxes of 48 packs of cards, 10,000 total cards in all in that box. And there could be some Gretzky cards. Do you think that's a risk worth taking?
I mean, it's a risk worth taking if you're going to go for it, because they've said that in the same piece that a pristine Gretzky card, rookie card, went for $3.75 million at auction. Now, my question would be that if there are up to 27 or 30 Gretzky rookie cards, what does that do to the overall value of a Gretzky rookie card? Because surely it brings it down. Because these things are, I assume, still in wrapper, still in pristine, near mint condition, if they've never been opened. I don't know what the packaging would be. I imagine they're probably either foil or paper wrapped.
Yeah.
That would be my query, is like, if you buy it on the basis that, yeah, I'm going to get 30 cards that are valued at roughly $3.5 million each, you're not walking away with all that in value when you sell 29 of them and keep one for yourself. However, like you say, they are part of an identity in North America. And do you know what? As soon as I saw this in the running order, I knew that if Anthony was watching live, he'd be the first one, because I see him online opening up hockey cards pretty regularly, so I know that he is a cards guy. So he said that the brand Opeachy, now Upper Deck, trade that way, and I pretty sure I've seen Anthony open up a few upper deck sets fairly recently as well. So, I mean, if you're into that, then that's great. If you're into trading cards, give me a shout. I've got a few Pokemon cards from back in the day, the original OG 151 or 152 Pokemon. They're still in Scotland. More than willing to send photos if anyone's willing to buy a couple of sort of really, really nice high condition Pokemon cards. Probably not the, the setting for this. I've also randomly got some Dragon Ball cards as well if anyone wants those.
I was just about to say, has this turned into a personal selling podcast for you, John? The last question I was wondering I had about the last question I had about this was, what do you think 45-year-old bubblegum tastes like? Do you think it still has consistency of bubblegum?
Yeah, it must do. I mean, if it's gonna be from like the 1970s. I mean, at that point it was basically chewing gum was made out the same stuff as the puck, so I assume that it's still gonna be fine. It's just whether it's got flavor still.
But yeah, that's
it's like
that's
90 I think at that point that stuff was like 99% carcinogenic, so that's your bigger problem. Marty, with that then, I want to shift us over, and I know that you're feverishly pressing buttons. Let's have a look at some jerseys, shall we? Are moving into the retro period of the Elite League, and a few jerseys have been released so far. I think we've got two retro jerseys to talk about. First one we've got is Cardiff Devils. Murray, I'm going to ask you what you think of this first before I give any thoughts on it. So they've obviously gone old school. I think this is the OG Devils logo as well from back in the day, with the OG colours as well, the sort of very, very bright green across the shoulders and slightly darker green that's on the logo itself. But what's your thoughts on this?
I mean, this is exactly, my thoughts are, this is exactly what I hoped Belfast Giants would have done previously for Retro Night, and it was what I inside hope the Giants would do this year, which I am very doubt that will happen. But I know they only changed this new logo, their new branding and their new logo this year. And some people will be like, well, why did you go back to an old logo? Why didn't you go with your new logo, but with old branding, which is what some people say you should have done. In my head though, and what I like about it is I like that whenever, if they have an alternative logo, make use of it. You still own that logo, make use of it. We have our Finn Giant logo, our original one. Why aren't we pulling out that original logo for a one-off game for a retro night? I still stand by we should have had that on last year's retro one. I still stand by I think we should be pulling out that logo this year for a retro night. Will that happen in Belfast? No, it won't. It'll be probably that Belfast Giants font, which is on everything now. Your hat is one example. I think it's right. I like it. I like the throwback, but I always like the throwback. I like it when the Steelers did theirs and had their original Steeler brand and logo. I'm a fan of it.
I don't know what happened to my camera. All of a sudden I've confused it by putting my hat right close to the camera. I do like this, and I totally agree with you, and I thought that was where you would go with it, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to say it first before I did. This is what the Giants failed at when we did retro the last couple of years, is not in any particular way paying homage to the classic interpretation of what the team's logo was. Putting this sort of branding on, putting it in font or just in text, it doesn't have the effect. Now, I know that they did the jersey in the style of the first season jersey. It doesn't really count without the logo. The logo is the identity of the team. And did they? Was it like the third season jersey maybe?
The Giants talking about here last season?
Yeah.
No. The Giants last season, their retro jersey last season had nothing to do in any way, shape or form with any part of Giants history. It had nothing to do with anything in Giants history. There was no retroness about it. They created almost like a vintage style American school sweater. you know, that kind of idea. That's what the Giants jersey looked like last year. It was just the Belfast Giant, Belfast, you know, it just had Belfast on it. I don't even think it had Giants. It just had Belfast across the front. And it was like, I think it was a navy or a black color. It was like a random color that wasn't even, didn't even make any sense. If they had have went with Belfast and they had used season one jersey pattern, perfect. I'd be happy. And I stand by that this year again. If they go with new logo and a throwback to, say, the Ties jersey or something from like 19, like from 2000 and like 2004, 2005, around that season, perfect. That's exactly what you want. But the fact that Giants last year did absolutely nothing for Retro Night that threw back to any part of the history of the Belfast Giants was a bit disappointing. That's my take on it.
Yeah. Look, we hope to be pleasantly surprised whenever we finally get a retro jersey. And look, I don't want to be this guy, but I am getting jerseyed out a little bit. Like, this season, I don't know if you guys talked about it in the last podcast or not. I even think I said it before when we talked about the Chinese New Year jerseys. I am really starting to get jerseyed out. I have absolutely no problem with the causes for them, the want to raise money for it and all the rest of it. And I don't want to be the curmudgeon-y, like, old guy who's set in his ways. But there is something to be said about wearing your team colours and your team playing in your team colours. Like, it's precisely why some sports have very strict rules about uniform. And I get that hockey, especially the NHL, has changed its attitude towards it in a way which I don't think anyone really liked or respected, because they went after some very specific causes when they kind of changed their stance on things. But things like MLB, like football, American football, when I say football, but even soccer football, like, they have very specific rules about like home, away, alternate strips and all the rest of it. And it's designed in a way to keep a sense of team, a sense of identity and all the rest of it. And I want to be very clear, and I'm going to say it again, I have absolutely no problem with the idea of causes and doing stuff for causes. But when you talk about hockey gear, there are so many other opportunities rather than continuing to redesign and redesign jerseys. You could wear special socks. You could wear special shorts. You could have gloves which are specific to the cause or whatever. And I realize I sound like a really boring, curmudgeon-y, grumpy old man when I'm talking about this in this way, because I own a couple of like special one-off jerseys which are really, really close to my heart. My Pride jersey in particular, I absolutely love. I'd be heartbroken if teams stopped doing that, but I think they need to start choosing very carefully what they do it for. Now, the retro one, is it one in my mind that we really have to be doing? Probably not. These teams have brand identity. They have this. And look, the Giants and the Devils in particular have, in the last couple of seasons, last few seasons, have taken the next step in their brand identity. Do you necessarily have to look back once a year to wear a jersey with an old logo on it or with something that looks back? You don't necessarily have to do that, because most of these teams will have banners hanging in their arena with their old logo if they were lucky enough to win something. Coventry, I think, have banners up with their old logos. Fife, while their logo hasn't really changed that much, they have banners with very slightly tweaked logos from back in the day. You can do that without having to do a new jersey every weekend, and I completely understand why some fans have been complaining about a lack of brand and team identity within like their team this season, especially.
I'll agree with you in some ways on what you've said. I think to echo some of the stuff that we talked about in the last podcast, John, when you weren't here, we talked about something very similar in relation to those kind of fatigue around, you know, the special edition or special event jerseys. And I think our take on it was kind of, as you say, those events we're seeing where they're charity driven, great, not a problem. Two things. Firstly, if the Giants, I'm picking the Giants, and I'm sorry for picking on the Giants here, but the Giants is the first example of this. If the Giants are going to be brave and bold about some of the nights that they've done this year, where they've kind of really took a real risk and a real chance on some of the designs they've come up with, which have been quite like, whoa, in your face. Why would they not continue to do something like that when it comes to something like a retro night? Why wouldn't they continue to do like a bold statement piece or something that kind of really stands out? Because it didn't happen last year. Maybe will. Again, we'll have
tonight.
But going back to your comments just about what you were saying in relation to the fact that we have so often so many events and so many kind of special edition jerseys and whatever it was, the retro night particularly is one night that actually I don't mind, and it would be more special if we didn't see so many of them earlier in the year. If we didn't see so many of them building up to this point, then that's fine. If teams, like, I know, like, and it was clearly put out there and it's been stated by Todd Kelman's one example, who's the person who stated this, the amount of money that a team can bring in from these nights where they sell off every single shirt off the back, it's massive business. Because if you have a sellout crowd, which we've been having pretty much close to sellout, if not sellout crowds, close to sellout crowds since December, say, shall we say, from Christmas time onwards. If you have an opportunity to make some money for the team going into the next season based on having special one-off nights where you can raise, where you can have money, either charity night or just money like we had for the not Cowboy Night, sorry. Yeah, Cowboy Night. That wasn't charity. That was just the team taking money from that. But you have a sellout crowd, pretty much 7,000 people, you know, more jerseys being sold on that night. It's a big business. So I can see why it's an idea to do it and doing so many of them. But if you were kind of like the NHL, I know the NHL and I have kind of scaled back a lot of what they do. But if you have the league just doing a league-wide thing of like saying, right, put in a mandate to say, okay, we have 5 events across this year that we're going to do that all teams will take part in, and that's all we'll include. So we'll have our Halloween ones like we always have, we'll have our Christmas ones like we always have, we'll have a Pride night, we'll have a retro night, and maybe like a cancer night or something. So you did 5 of those and you focus on those 5. It makes those jerseys a bit more special. Again, you don't get the same fatigue as you get maybe this year, but I know that local charities and stuff really benefit from it. And I don't want to take away from that, but I just think that
don't want to take away from that. But you can do bucket collections. You can do any number of other things. It doesn't always have to be a jersey. Can I make one other point before we move on? Because it actually links into the next jersey that we're going to look at. And it's a statement I want to say is, if you're going to design all these different jerseys for throughout the year, for these different events, all the rest of it, can I suggest to some teams, and I'm not going to say any in particular, but can I suggest to some teams that your basic offering, your team colours, your team jersey, please put some thought into the design of it. Please make them your best jerseys of the year. Your home, your away, and your third, if you're going to have a third kit, they need to be your best offering for the entire season. Because right now, the basics look too basic, and some of the designs are awful. And look, we've talked about it on the podcast before, and anyone who is a regular listener from back in like the start of this season in particular will know exactly what I'm talking about, will know exactly which teams I'm talking about. Some teams' basic designs of their basic jerseys and also their merchandise lines is terrible. Yeah. There is very little design going into it. There's very little thought of what the brand and team identity is, and it doesn't follow through into the fans themselves. And I don't know whether that's being seen through drops in merchandise sales and all the rest of it. And maybe because that's lacking is why so many people are willing to drop money on some of these one-off occasion jerseys. Now, when I talk about really good occasion jerseys, let's talk about one in particular. Let's go to the next one here. Let's talk about the Dundee Stars doing their 70s throwback jersey. That's a stunner.
Yeah, I would agree. I like the Stars one. The Stars one is exactly what I envision when I think retro. It shouts to me, this is retro. The branding, the style of it, everything shouts to me as this stands out as retro. And I really like it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so my friend from Fife, Akira, he basically made me aware of this. I hadn't even seen the announcement from Dundee, and he loves throwing jerseys up to me now online because he knows that I love like critiquing jerseys. That's like an old school hockey sweater. I absolutely love that. I love the cut. It's not just the design either. I love the cut of them. I like the color block design. I like the banding at the bottom. It bears absolutely nothing to do and has no likeness other than a couple of little sponsors, like their trademark, which is their title sponsor. It bears no resemblance to their regular season jerseys. And they're not saying it's a throwback. They're saying it's a 70s style jersey. That's fantastic because it looks like an old school hockey sweater. It's got the laces, it's got the ties, it's got the like athletic font for the lettering, the stars across the chest, but also the captain's badges, the C's and the A's, are those proper like collegiate lettering fonts, which are fantastic. Everything about that jersey in particular is everything I love to see in these alternative jerseys. And our sometimes co-host Aaron also agrees. He says it's a lovely retro jersey. Marty, I think we've got one more in the slideshow before I want to talk about something else. Yeah. If you're the Glasgow Clan, have a word with yourself, because what the hell is going on? I mean, your on-ice product this year, not fantastic. Your jersey offering, if it's not plagiarised, it's this. Like, it's just grim.
I genuinely didn't know until this week that the Glasgow Clan have an annual Rave the Rink game in partnership with Colourfest every single year. So you think your big box, small box, you know, big fish, small fish cardboard box, you think of that and you think of your rave nights. I genuinely didn't know this existed, but I kind of was thinking to myself, why have they got weird shaped popcorn boxes on their jersey and exploding popcorn on the arms, but it's actually flowers? I was kind of like, I don't know. I wasn't a raver. I've never been a raver. I don't know. Is like flower power and kind of retro 70s style kind of like hippie kind of designs. Is that your kind of, is that a rave thing? I don't know. I just don't get these jerseys. I don't get where the design came from. I don't understand how it represents rave, but again, I wasn't in that scene. So maybe it does. I don't know, but I just don't get it. I don't get these jerseys at all.
I don't get the jersey. I don't get the night. I don't understand it. I'm not willing to read their website page about it because the jersey immediately puts me off. They've also done what the Glasgow have done all season, and they've also got their warm-up jerseys are special for this as well. They need to have a word with themselves. I will be completely blunt when I say, when I talked earlier about the basics having to be done right and it not being done right, Glasgow, you're a prime example. Sort yourselves out. Get somebody who understands design to come in and have a look at your jerseys, look at your uniform, look at your brand identity, and figure yourselves out. Because ever since your rebrand to the Glasgow Clan, I'm going to be totally honest and say I think you've had one good jersey, and I think it was a Challenge Cup jersey. It was a black one, which I think was really, really nice. Every other jersey has been god-awful since then.
This year particularly, I feel like they have really placed their foot in wrong this year particularly, only because I just feel like they, like, think about the problem they had during the earlier part of the season where they basically just stole a design for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the Willy Wonka thing. Glasgow and Willy Wonka.
Who could have known that later on in the year Glasgow would be infamous once again for Willy Wonka?
Wow. I just seen the link there. I just think to myself, like, I mean, yeah, it's just horrendous. But anyway, there's another retro jersey has been released, and I'm trying to feverishly add it to the thing. So we'll continue on with the next story and the next
continue. Jersey. Well, I'm going to drop this off for now. And I am going to just very, very quickly, because really annoyingly, I forgot to add this to the slideshow. I'm going to do the incredible
I've added the images to the slideshow. That's why I was going to say, let's continue with the slides.
Oh, have you? So in that case, here, hang on. We need to put that slideshow back up then and put the next image up.
You continue with the story and then not. I will.
So,
continue with the story.
Yeah, it's happening now. So, earlier in the season, we all know that we had one of our first, let's call it live guests on the podcast. We had Gavin Kelly, who from Belfast, netminder, who played on the bench for Fife in his first professional game, where I believe we were the first place where he revealed that he was in fact the first openly gay player to appear on a game sheet in a European game, a professional European game. Unfortunately, because of the last minute nature of the call up to the Flyers that he had, Gav wasn't able to be left a jersey, and we kind of put out a few messages after he was on the podcast and said, look, this needs to change. That was like we were calling out the Flyers, and that's absolutely not what we were doing. What we were doing was putting some positive pressure on the Flyers, if you like, to say, come on ahead, guys, let's get a jersey to Gav. So it wasn't Pride Night in particular that Gav played for Fife, but in a very, very classy move, what they have done is during the last trip over that the Flyers had to Belfast, which was a couple of weeks ago now, they dropped off one of their Pride jerseys all emblazoned up with the Pride colours and with Gav's name and number to him when they were over in Belfast. So thankfully, after a few weeks, we can finally say that Gav has his jersey and can keep that as a memento of what was an incredible experience, an incredible night for Gav in particular. Just brilliant to see the Flyers kind of following through and getting this to Gav, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I will say, and I'll stand by it, one of the best designs for a jersey this season, and I stand by that. I think it was the right jersey to have, the right jersey to get to Gav, and yeah, phenomenal. It's great, and great for Fife to notice it, and even their tweet as well kind of acknowledged the fact that it was something that they wanted to make sure they did. So fair play, great job to Fife, and looks good.
I still stand by the comment that I said that is, and I had a back and forward on social media with the people who designed this one after the podcast where we talked about it. Still stand by my original critique. God tier hockey design.
Yeah, it's amazing. So good. The jersey that I was trying to feverishly put into the slides before we finished off was, there's another retro jersey has been released, and that is the Guildford Flames have announced theirs. They're heading back to their 2000-2001 season for their fixture against Glasgow on the 23rd of March, and this is their take on their retro night. Your thoughts, John?
That's their home jersey, isn't it? That's just their home jersey. There's nothing. I mean, where is it different? Guildford's entire approach to uniform baffles me. I just don't understand how they manage it. I've reached a limit with this.
To be fair, I'm going to be the first one to say it, and now people are going to look at me like I'm insane for this. We have this culture in the UK, particularly, where year on year we like to make money from jerseys. I don't know if it's maybe we make more money per year based on the fact that we change our jerseys so significantly, and that's why we make more money, because we do that. If you think every sport here in the UK, this is what happens. So rugby, football, ice hockey, Gaelic games, whatever that might be, in your local area. Don't know if cricket wears jerseys, I don't know. But
no, they wear a lot of wool.
We change up. We in the UK here, we change up our jersey design every single year because we know people will buy the next thing up. They'll buy the next. Well, in theory, people will buy the next jersey. Now, I could go over to my wall here of jerseys and I could pick out a jersey off that wall. Let's go with Toronto Maple Leafs, for example. right? Toronto Maple Leafs, their jersey every year, year on year, is blue and white. Looks exactly the same design. The white one on blue, exactly the same design, same stripes.
You still have about nine of them, though.
Yeah, because maybe there's the odd change of shape of a logo. Speaking of retro jerseys, I'm wearing some Pat's retro Toronto jersey tonight. Yep. But you know what? You see what I'm getting at? NHL, yep. It would be an unusual thing for the jersey to change so much, but yet we're complaining that the jersey hasn't changed enough. But I like this jersey because it does. It's exactly what I kind of would like to see the Giants kind of do. If they don't go with the, again, I'm going to go back to the Giants. Sorry, but that is my team. That is the team I follow. It's the team that I would buy a jersey from. I would like the Giants to do a 2000-2001 season jersey, the same design, but maybe with the new logo. In this case, it looks very similar to before because obviously the logo for the Gopher Flames hasn't changed. So therefore, it looks like just any other run-of-the-mill standard jersey for them. But you can see how this is an early season jersey. It's just done differently because it's on a different brand. It's different branded. It's different supplier. So it's going to look slightly different. But I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I actually like the fact that they've been back to an old style jersey. Actually, the Giants did do it a few years ago. The Giants a few years ago did go back and do, I don't know if it was an anniversary year, where they went back and they did the 2000 and I think it was the 2004 jerseys. They redid that just with the new style on printed rather than supplemented crested jerseys, and I like them, and I think I'd actually put some money into Shut Off Back that weekend because I wanted that jersey. So yeah, I can, it's what I like. I kind of like that idea, and I think in this case for the Guildford Flames, I think actually it works. And I know you're saying it doesn't look too different, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it looks good because it does still look a bit retro to me.
I'm just on the opposite side of it. Like I genuinely like when you do something different. I totally understand that Guildford have an interesting way in which they have to maintain their brand and maintain their identity and how they're allowed to use their logo and all the rest of it, which is hilarious when it comes to jersey auctions because they're always like four figures for a jersey, which is just absolutely insane. And no doubt those retro jerseys, which will be worn once, will go for crazy money when they go up for auction, or if they go for auction or how they manage it. I don't know. And honestly, I'm not a Guildford fan. I don't care.
Before we move on to the end of our podcast, I do want to point this out. Aaron is completely right in this comment that he made. Philadelphia did, in fact, have a relaunch a few years back. I think it was maybe two seasons ago, around maybe 2021, around about then. And they changed the whole shade of orange to a different shade of orange. I do remember that, Aaron. So that's a good point. Change to orange can make a difference.
Every team has done it because actually you talked about the Leafs, and the Leafs have done it while we've been doing this podcast. And they went from did they go from the jaggy leaf to the smooth leaf, or was it from the smooth leaf to the jaggy leaf?
Yeah, smooth to jaggy.
And then, Preds, the Preds have done it. They've gone from what their original logo was, which was like the silver, saber-tooth tiger logo, to the now more sort of flat, more stylized, more like the Devils and Giants logo. The whole idea that you can scale it and all the rest of it. They couldn't have done that with the original logo. There was too much detail in it. So look, our NHL teams do it, and that's fine. I think my issue is where you've got too much, you've got too little, where there's not enough thought put into the design process. It's jerseys and uniform at the end of the day, and it needs to do a particular thing, which is identify your team and make you look different from the other team. But it can get blood up sometimes when it's maybe not done in the right way, and people can get a bit pissy about it.
Yep. And on that is our last note on this podcast for the topics and coverage of this episode. We will be back in 2 weeks' time for our next episode. I will not be here. So, John, you will be taking the reins for the next two or three episodes, I will say. I'm taking a short hiatus. I will be away for a while. So I will leave you in the capable hands of John for the next few episodes. If you haven't done
that,
so...
That being said, I just need to say something sort of on the podcast for someone in particular to hear. Mark, that now means that you have to message me, or you have to message the Door 14 socials with your questions and your input, because if you send it to Marty for the next few podcasts, it's not going to make it into the podcast. So make sure you're sending it to the right place.
Good point. That is a very good point. Before I do the social, let's take us to this week's social, as we always do and how we close off the episode. If you don't already, get on our social channels and follow us. We're on all of the major social media channels. We're on X, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok at Door14Hockey. Check out this episode, all previous episodes on our website at Door14Hockey, it's www.door14hockey.com. Check out our YouTube channel. If you haven't watched the video versions of our episodes, you can get that YouTube.com/Door14. Get to see our beautiful faces. And also, obviously, we're on all podcast provider of choice. So make sure you like, subscribe, add comments, rate, whatever it is on your podcast provider of choice, and leave us some feedback. It'd be great. And we really do appreciate all of that. That's it for this week. All it is for us to sign off. I'm Marty.
I'm John. Thanks everyone for the input tonight as well in the chat.
Have a great week.